Thank you. Members, sorry for a little delay starting, but still a couple of issues to address here. Yesterday, we concluded dealing with Article 3 in one respect, but of course, need to now finish it up. And so, the conclusion yesterday was the DE amendment failed, and now we have to build from there. So, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'd like to offer the GK018 amendment, and then I would like to delete Section 7.
Do we have that? The one from yesterday.
Yep. Sorry, it's a G018 from yesterday. Then I'd like to amend it by deleting Section 7. And if we have agreement on that, I have another an amendment to offer.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, could I get a copy of the amendment? I can't seem to get mine from yesterday.
Is there a copy from yesterday? And I could use one as well. So we're moving to delete.
Everyone
okay.
The statutory language.
Right. So now that I have one as well.
Here she goes.
So the statutory language, I believe Section 7. Yesterday, motion to remove that. Are those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Removed.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the GK020 amendment, but then I have an oral amendment to that amendment right away.
Mr. Chair, the change that he wants in here is on 1.4, delete a and insert the, and after match, insert requirement, and then delete not required and insert 10%. So I'll read, notwithstanding Minnesota Statute Section 85.535, Subdivision 3, the local match requirement is 10% for money appropriated in fiscal year 2012 for grants under this section.
Okay, thank you.
So, Mr. Chair and members, yeah, he essentially asked for a 10% match the first year, and then the 25% match remains for the second year.
All right, discussion. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate, I was very excited under the original amendment and still not happy that it's such a low match for this large amount of money, and I cannot support the oral amendment.
Further discussion? Those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I've got one small thing, and I'm wondering if the DNR can react to it. On page 6 of Senator Peterson's amendment, line 6.22, it was a House position. It was Representative Hancock's bill, this LaSalle Lake, that we wanted to really encourage the DNR to look at the possibility of leasing the resort out. I'm wondering if the DNR has feelings. It does not say enter a long-term lease on line 6.22. And I'm wondering, do you have the flexibility? I think under current law, you would need a statutory change to allow a long-term lease. Do you feel this language allows you to look at the option of a long-term lease, or would we be good to put those words in there?
Mr. Bull.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, Forrest Bow, Deputy Director of the DNR Parks and Trails, and to Representative McNamara's question. Line 6.22, does this allow us to enter into a long-term lease? Representative McNamara, I believe what we would need to do is to change the language in Chapter 16A, which limits the time that the state can do a lease of property.
Follow.
Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director Bowe, thank you. I understand you can't enter in a lease yet, and I don't think it was legislative intent to allow you to enter a lease yet, but it would allow you to come back to next year's legislature with potentially a proposal. Do you believe you can evaluate a long-term option without the words long-term being in there? Does just evaluating an option of a lease with current statutes not allowing long-term? Do you want me to do an oral amendment on 6.22 to add enter long-term before the word lease, or do you feel you can at least look at the option?
Mr. Bowe?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I believe we could look at the option, but clearly it would be up to you whether you want to ensure that we do that.
Mr. Chair, I don't feel a need to put that language in because the department has said they can evaluate that option without the language.
Thank you. All right, anything else on that? All right, then I would like to move the A1 amendment.
We haven't adopted this amendment.
Oh, didn't we? Did we adopt?
No.
We did, I thought.
Yeah, we just adopted it.
A1. But you could still try to adopt this. We can just fit it in. But don't worry about that.
Well, if we haven't voted on his yet, please.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess I thought we had voted on the on the GK 0182. Okay. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Don't confuse us, Denny.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. We did two votes.
Yeah.
All right. Now I have an amendment. I'd like to move the A1.
Where is that?
What? The,
don't have it.
Is that, does everyone have it?
No.
No.
It's yours.
Is that from yesterday also, Mr. Chair?
It's coming. Yeah, what this does is addresses problems that can come up when there's a project affected by multiple entities, townships, counties, or whatever, where the whole project is stopped because one of the entities won't or can't contribute their match. I'll just give an example. Maybe you understand. For example, if there was a $200,000 trail and the match then would be $50,000, but there are five entities involved, two counties and, let's say, three townships, and four of them say they'll pay and the other one just says, we don't have any money, we can't do it, then the whole project in some cases dies because the others are unwilling to pick up an added share. So it just addresses hardships that might arise in certain areas. Yes.
Mr. Chair, could you just, this amendment isn't referenced to the side-by-side that we have in front of us. Could you just tell me what page this is in the side-by-side?
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think what you do is you're really just amending the GK 018, and I think it would just be page 3, line 17 after the period. If you look at the GK 018, it applies to the grants. So since it's not to the side by side because we're not working from the side by side on this one.
Thank you.
Okay,
Mr. Chair, members, I'd speak in favor of that. I have seen a number of different situations where one community has been able to prevent projects from moving forward, and so I would encourage members to support this amendment.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, then does this pertain only to the section on parks and trails?
Yes.
Thank you.
Further discussion?
It's in here.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. We may have a, we have something else we need to do.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Talk for a while.
Mr. Chair, I know Director Nobles is in the audience today, and if this would be appropriate, I would like to have some questions of him, if we could, in regards to the agencies and how they keep track of their time.
I think this would be a good time to do that, just before we conclude Article 3. Welcome, Mr. Nobles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jim Nobles, legislative auditor. And I understand, Mr. Chairman and members, that there's been some discussion of the issue of administrative costs, and I think that's what I'm here to talk about. It's an issue that the Office of the Legislative Auditor has already dealt with pretty significantly, and I think it's going to continue to be an issue that we are going to have to address as we audit the legacy funds. Our first experience was really sort of unanticipated, because we were doing an audit last year at the Arts Board. It really wasn't intended necessarily to look at legacy money specifically, but we ran across a situation that we thought we needed to bring to your attention, where we found that in the law, the legislature had been very directive, very specific about how much money the State Arts Board and other organizations could use for administrative costs, administrative expenses. But then when money was granted out to the Regional Arts Board, boards, they took a significantly larger share for administrative costs. And partly they did that, I think, because you were silent on what that percentage should be. So did it mean that they should, in the spirit of 3%, 2%, 2.5%, small numbers for all the other organizations, should they stay within that small number? Well, many of them didn't. They took up to 13%, as I recall. And in fact, when we raised this issue, they told us that within the nonprofit sector, that it was common, and I quote, to use a standard of between 15 and 20% for administrative costs. And again, we didn't think that really was consistent with the spirit of what the legislature was hoping to accomplish with legacy money. So we raised that issue in an audit report about the Arts Board. We are now out doing audits of the three outdoor funds, Outdoor Heritage, Parks and Trails, and Clean Water. And we're again finding that there is some uncertainty, some ambiguity about how much money can organizations, both state agencies and nonprofits, use for administrative expense. I want to note, however, that as we've explored this issue, it really isn't a simple one. It's complicated by a lot of factors, but one certainly is that there are really two categories of administrative expense. One category you could call direct administrative expense, and that is when you give an organization, let's say, $100,000 with a very specific purpose, a very specific programmatic project purpose. There is going to be some administrative expense to do that. And I think most of you would say, and I think you've even said in the law, that for direct administrative expense, they can use legacy money for that. Sometimes you've put a percent, not up to, again, 3%, 5%. In some cases, you've left them the discretion to decide, particularly in the outdoor heritage area. But you've given them the directive that whatever they use for administrative expense has to be directly related to and necessary for that specific appropriation. Now, there's another issue. Thank you. There's another issue within administrative expense, and that's indirect costs, overhead expense. It's that sort of even higher level from the people working directly on the project or the program that you wanted the organization to implement. It gets into expenses like rent, insurance, management salaries, computer costs, copy machines, all the things that were there that may now be used in part for implementing the legacy fund appropriation that you give them. But the question is, can they use then part of the legacy appropriation to cover some of this indirect costs, institutional costs? The Outdoor Heritage Council has said in the for the Outdoor Heritage money, no, that you cannot use it for overhead institutional costs. And I think one of the reasons for that is because there is the constitutional provision, as you know, and I brought it with me. And it says, and this is, again, part of the law that that organizations have to comply with, that the dedicated money, that's the legacy money, under this section must supplement traditional sources of funding for these purposes and may not be used as a substitution, or as a substitute. So if an organization has traditionally been paying their rent and their insurance and their management salaries out of other sources, and now they have 10% of their budget or whatever amount is coming from legacy funds, can they use then legacy money to pay for some of these overhead institutional indirect costs? I think that's something you need to really address. It has, as I say, been addressed by the Lessard Council, and I think they've done a very good job of trying to sort that out. But I don't think it has been fully sorted out for the other three funds. And as a result, I think there's a lot of uncertainty and ambiguity out there. You, the legislature, and I don't need to tell you this, you know this very well, you are the first line of defense, so to speak, for ensuring that every provision in the constitutional amendment is adhered to. So it may present to you some difficult choices. It is certainly going to present to the agencies some difficult choices in an era of significant budget cuts. Wouldn't it be reasonable, some might say, for them to take legacy money and backfill some of those cuts? But wouldn't that be substituting a traditional source with legacy money? And isn't that exactly what the constitutional provision says cannot be done? So some of this, I think, has to be addressed by you. But I would like to emphasize to a lot of the folks in the room here who have a tough job, and I acknowledge that, implementing these programs and these laws in difficult economic times when they are suffering budget cuts, that all of us in state government, anybody that gets this money, even the nonprofits, have to not only adhere to the language in the appropriation law, they have to give adherence to what's in the Constitution. That's the law, too. And sometimes I think we have not necessarily paid as much attention to that in the implementation of some of these appropriations as to the letter of the law that you write. So, Mr. Chairman, I think some of you were hoping that I was going to come here with some quick and easy answers to some of these complicated problems. But what I can help you do is try to frame these issues. I can give you the experience that we're having out there, digging deep into these departments and agencies and into the nonprofits. And maybe it's just going to require over time. Maybe it can't be settled all in one legislative session in one conference committee. For example, in August, we will bring to you a very detailed accounting of how money has been spent for the first 2 years for the three outdoor funds. And we will show you, not every penny, because we don't audit every penny, there will be a sampling, but we will certainly show you situations that might draw into question whether or not we have fully complied with all of the provisions, not only in the appropriations laws, but in the Constitution as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Torkels.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome, Mr. Nobles, to the committee. Very glad you could join us today. Have you had a chance to review the language that's in Article 5 of the bill that's before us today?
Mr. Chairman, I do not have the bill in front of me. If you want to direct me.
If you have not reviewed it, we don't need to try and review it in consort here this afternoon. You know, in general, I think this is a work in progress. And in general, I think we would hope that the legislative auditor's office would work with the agencies to try and, you know, reach these definitions and some clarity for them before they spend these funds so that we're not playing gotcha after they've done the work and spent the money. I think there's a desire on behalf of the recipients of these funds to do it right. And it's, I think, behooves us to properly inform them before, as they're in process, that what the sideboards are and what the parameters are, and try and more accurately define some of these terms so that they can do their jobs.
Mr. Nobles.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Torkelson, we indeed do work with agencies. We're not trying to be adversaries. We're trying to come to some understanding together about how we comply with state law and constitutional provisions. But I would note, Representative Torkelson, that we are out there auditing 09 and 010 expenditures, and they were sort of out the door and being implemented before we were engaged with agencies about some of these issues. And so we may well have some issues to present to you, and we don't by any means, Representative Torkelson, mean them to be a game of gotcha. It's a process by which we are all trying to work towards compliance with the law and with the Constitution. So it may be that we will have to indicate, as we did with the Arts Board. And again, this was an attempt to embarrass anyone or play a game of gotcha, but we thought that it was our responsibility to bring this issue forth to you for you to decide. Are you comfortable with 13% administrative expense for these kinds of appropriations? So we are not trying to make up the rules. We don't have a book somewhere that says it should be 2%, 5%, or 13%. But we do have a responsibility to add to transparency and accountability and bring these issues forth for your consideration. And we will indeed do that in August.
Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Nobles, for those remarks. I do appreciate that. And I think this is a team effort that we are kind of in new territory to a certain degree because of the nature of the constitutional amendment and how it relates to other spending. And I look forward to working with you and seeing your reports and using those reports to do a better job for all of us and for the citizens of the state of Minnesota. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Nobles. And appreciate the work you've done, as Representative Torkelson indicated. But I'm wondering, because obviously when we were working on the promulgation of the amendment in 05, 06, 07, to be fair, I don't think anybody gave any thought to the integration of additional administrative expenses relative to the monies appropriated. 2 years ago, when we first passed appropriations, obviously there was consideration given, but no track record. So I guess what I'm wondering is obviously, when you look at Lessard Sams, it strikes me that's pretty easy, to the extent that there's no question that's an entirely new entity created through the amendment. So obviously there has to be some administrative money with Lessard Sams coming out of the amendment, just by definition, I'm assuming, because, again, it's a totally new entity. But how do you distinguish? I'm trying to think from simpler to more complicated. Let's take what we're doing right now, the park section. There has been an ongoing granting process for parks, obviously. But where you have this much additional money, how do you determine what else you might need by way of administrative support or not? That's the key. And let me use a couple of examples. You mentioned the Arts Board, and I share some of the concern. Obviously, they went from, 2,000 grants to probably triple. Maybe that's an unfair number, but or too high of a number. But obviously, have many more grants than they've ever given out, and nowhere close, much further beyond what they've done. So you would assume there'd be some need for more administrative support there. We had a new program 2 years ago with the libraries where, again, there's been a grant system in place. But, again, something unique that had not been done before. So how do you make the determination? Just on a case-by-case basis, you're suggesting there's not one size fits all, but how do you distinguish, say, something that's kind of exploded versus something that might be similar but still increased?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen.
Mr. Nobles.
You ask how we will determine. I mean, first of all, we try to understand as best we can what the standards are by which we are supposed to go in and make a judgment and a measurement. And clearly in this case, it is the appropriations law, the statute. It is also sometimes the work of the Lessard Sams Council, which sets forth some specific standards and expectations, what can be expended, what cannot. There are a variety of things, but it really is, as you suggest, it's a case-by-case, fact-based situation. It is much like you would understand, Senator Cohen, as an attorney, that there's the law and then there are the facts, and you have to bring them together. And what my office does through our financial auditors is we dig deep into organizations and find the facts. We look in detail at exactly how money has been spent and whether or not organizations can document that these administrative expenses that they have paid with legacy funds are directly related to and necessary to the implementation of the program or the project that you have funded. So there is going to be some expectation on our part that agencies are going to be able to document whether you have a very specific cap on administrative expense, or whether you have general language and leave it to their discretion. For example, I mean, we have faced the issue where you have put forth a percentage, 3%, for administrative expense. Well, we are the agent of accountability and auditing here, so we have to go in and we have to see the detailed documents that determine and show to us that, in fact, they stayed within that 3% or 2.5% or whatever it is. If it is a more general standard, needed and reasonable, then they're going to have to demonstrate that. And it might be 6%. It might be 0.5%. But, again, there's a standard that you have set forth, and then we're going to find the facts and see if they're in compliance with that standard.
Senator Cohen?
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nobles, then additionally, obviously I would assume with the granting organizations, particularly since those organizations either come directly under the purview of state government or are tied into state government, say in the case of the Met Council as an example, there's some easier ability to make that determination. What about a grantee? Are you able to get down to that level?
Mr. Knowles.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, we are going to that level. We have the authority to go into private nonprofit organizations that receive state funds, and as a part of the audit work we're doing that now. We are going into a large number of nonprofit organizations and applying the same standard to them, the same expectation, and we'll report the results to you in August.
And, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen,
one further question. Relative to the grantees, how do you make that determination then? If, for instance, you have every library in the state or a significant number of libraries in the state receiving grants, obviously those are public entities. Say with the Arts Board, where you have upwards of 3,000 or more grants, do you take kind of just a random sample within a granting organization, or how do you make that determination?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, certainly we, as I say, given the volume of dollars, given the volume of organizations, we're not going to be able to go to every organization and trace down every dollar. So as with every audit that we do, frankly, there has to be some sampling process. We are trying to look at a variety of organizations, speaking specifically to nonprofits, some large, some middle-sized, some smaller. Some receive a lot of money, some receive a small amount of money. So we're not trying to necessarily target any particular organization. We always work on the basis, though, in all of the audit work that we do, if we see some reason for concern, specifically about any sort of misuse of funds, then those organizations would be targeted. Mr. Chairman, I don't think I answered for all that I've said Representative McNamara's question, which got us into this. I think Representative McNamara was wondering, and he talked to me about this last night, whether or not it was an undue burden on state agencies to track their time so that they would be able to document that the money that they used for salaries, let's say, and benefits, and they're paying that out of legacy money, is there some way that they can document that? And my answer to that is absolutely. There is a positive time reporting requirement in state government. Everybody gets paid on the basis of a time sheet. And so that's already there. I mean, I sit down at my computer, record my time on a daily basis. Everybody in my office does. People in the executive branch do. That's simply a requirement. Now, do you have to get down? And I think some have suggested that this is an undue burden because it's going to get down to quarter hours or eighth of an hour or something, or that there could be some mix of experience that people are having in a meeting. You know, they're talking about legacy, but they're talking about other things. Well, there's always going to be an expectation and a standard of reasonableness. And again, this isn't anything new. At DNR, as all of you well know, they have a mix of funds. They have a lot of different funds. And clearly there is an expectation that people who pay through the Game and Fish Fund expect that DNR will use that money for those specific dedicated purposes, and that there will be a system within DNR by which they document that, and they do. So, Representative McNamara, I hope that's a response to your specific concern and question.
To this point.
Okay. Representative McNamara. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair, for the flexibility. To this point, Director Nobles, you talked specifically, I have a couple different points I'm wondering about. You talked about historically a position, clearly Bowser, DNR, MPCA have positions that are labeled that existed before legacy. Those positions before were funded 100% by activities outside of legacy, but the job description may now require that person to spend some of their time on legacy. If they document on their time, you use the terms of reasonableness to show that they are spending time on legacy. Just the fact that this historically was a position that didn't work on legacy doesn't mean they can't be reimbursed for their actual cost for legacy, and it doesn't matter who the person is within the agency, top to bottom, on the ability to be reimbursed or job costs, for lack of a better term, to the appropriate spot.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, you know, I want to be careful in that I don't want to give a general answer about every possible situation that we might encounter. So we are going to be very much making judgments on the facts as we find them in our audit work. But I would say in general, I would agree with you that if they can meet the test, which is in the law and attached to many of these appropriations, that the expenditures have to be direct and necessary to implementation of what the appropriation is asking the agency to do, then I think that they are within the bounds of compliance. But again, they will need to have some documentation of that. I think you would expect them to.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director Nobles, if they don't want to fill their time cards out because it's easier not to, then they're not going to get paid by legacy funds. That would be inappropriate, and I think you and I probably agree on that.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Nobles.
And Representative McNamara, I don't have the authority to decide whether or not they're going to get paid with legacy funds or not. I can only bring forth what I find and tell you about it, and then you can decide whether or not you're going to give them any more money for legacy funds.
A couple more. I'll try and go through them quickly. Director Noble, what about the situation where an agency has a copier, and maybe that copier existed before legacy, but now, for lack of better knowledge, 20% of the copies are now made for legacy and 80% are made for something else. Are they allowed to job cost 20% of that copier to legacy if they've documented? I mean, many offices today have the counters, and you write down your copies, what they're for. Even though that machine existed before, and it's now being used and being worn out partially by Legacy, are they able to job cost that to Legacy if they keep track of it?
Mr. Nobles.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, you know, we are going to get into some of those details. And, again, I'd like to not throw just a blanket approval sitting here right now that anybody that ever does that is going to be okay. You know, I want to see those facts. I want to see what that documentation is. These get to be fairly complicated issues, but I think the track you're going down is the track we're going to go down. You know, the problem is there are two tests here, and I think we have to keep that in mind. I realize that the second test, which is the constitutional test, the language that I just read, is somewhat unclear and may impose some burdens on you as a legislature and on agencies that you would prefer not to have to deal with. But we cannot make the language go away. And so, yes, the first test, I think, as you suggest, where it's a direct use of the copier for Legacy activities, they've documented it. It seems to me they passed that test. Okay, how we get past, how you get past, how the agency gets past the second test of whether or not they are using Legacy money for their copy machines, for their rent, for their management costs, for a whole wide range of things, and still comply with the constitutional provision, I think is a very difficult question. But ultimately, I guess the feeling I've had, and we have within our office, is that as difficult, as ambiguous as that language may be, it has to mean something. At some point, to have some level of compliance with that constitutional provision, you have to draw the line somewhere and say there are some costs that an organization might want to use Legacy money to pay, but it would, in fact, violate the constitutional provision. They would be using Legacy money to substitute for traditional sources of funding. Again, I think we're going to have to look at that on a fact situation and bring those back to you, and we will undoubtedly have this discussion several more times before we get absolute clarity.
But, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the flexibility. Director Nobles, I want to be sure, maybe I framed that question wrong. If the only other alternative was to backcharge the Game and Fish Fund for the copies, are we doing the legal right by charging Game and Fish funds for copies made for a Legacy project?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, obviously whatever charge accrued to the Game and Fish Fund would have to comply with the provisions of that law. That dedication, which is statutory but still important and has to be complied with, and we, frankly, have done a lot of audit work at DNR on that very question. Was Game and Fish Fund used appropriately within the bounds and parameters that you have established in law? And as you well know, there are many people out there in the interest groups and the people who pay money into the Game and Fish Fund who care about that question very much. So, I mean, one of the things that I think the Legislative Auditor's Office is doing here is trying to provide a service to you, to the public, and more specifically to the people who worked very hard to get this Legacy amendment passed, who had some very specific things in mind that they wanted to accomplish, and they and you helped work on drafting this constitutional amendment, and it clearly said that there was an effort here to have a dedicated fund that would supplement what was already occurring. Again, in days of deep budget cuts, it is hard to know where is the baseline. What are we building on? Are we building on the base, the foundation that was there when the amendment passed? Or are we building on the base and the foundation that will start over after these budget cuts occur? I'm not completely clear on that, frankly, and I don't think many other people are either. But at some point, and I don't think this is a high probability, but it isn't a probability that doesn't exist at all, that the use of this money could be the subject of legal action, of a lawsuit, by people who feel like the constitutional language is not being adhered to. I think we all want to avoid that.
Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe this may be my last one. Director Nobles, if we had an agency that had a payroll person, and historically they didn't have any of their people working on legacy, but now, again, I'll use just say it's 20% of their payroll work are legacy people. The payroll clerk is processing the payrolls for 100 people, 20 working on legacy, and these are just numbers I'm pulling out of the air. Is the payroll clerk able to some way substantiate, they won't know the minute spent on the individual check, but they know may know the gross number of checks or the total number of employees. Is there different good accounting principles they could use, such as the number of employees, to allocate their time potentially accordingly?
Mr. Nobles.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, again, what I would say in response to that is this really is not anything new. Most state agencies have a variety of funds, and so it's not all one big pot of money. And some of those pots of money come with strings attached and compliance requirements, not only the funds that you're familiar with, like Game and Fish, but the federal government enters in here significantly for many state agencies. As we all know, the federal government gives us a significant amount of money, and they are very, very insistent on reasonable allocation of their money towards overhead and administrative costs. And so every agency in state government that receives federal money has to have some system that is a reasonable basis for allocating costs to federal money. It's the same principle that is at work here, Representative McNamara. This is not new territory for these agencies.
Thank you. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative McNamara for this discussion. I think it's a good one. I'm looking at Auditor Nobles, I'm looking at your document from April 5th, 2011 that addresses the amount of percentages that different funds, and I understand the concern now. There's 5% in one fund, up to 5% in another fund, 2.5% and 2.5. I look at the outdoor, the Lassard Sams up to 1%, and there's another one here at 1%. So I certainly understand the concern, and we should probably get that narrowed down some kind of an agreement. I understand the frustration that Mr. Nobles is talking about. But in your document, with regards to those funds, the funds that must be spent on indirect costs or other institutional overhead charges. This language was developed by the Lassard Council to reinforce the position that money from the Alta Heritage Fund should only be used for costs that directly related to necessary to a project and program supported by the fund. So what that report is, and I appreciate the comments in there with regards to that, because we've done a lot of work on that, frankly, and the 1% that we've agreed upon to of the appropriation there, less than half a percent has been used. So we watch those dollars clearly, and it seems to be a pretty good model, and maybe we should be looking at that. So thanks for the discussion.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just comment briefly on that. Yes, I think the Lassard Sam's Council has done a very good job of thinking through a lot of these issues in detail and providing a lot of the sort of upfront advice to organizations like Representative Torkelson was referring to, and then doing a lot of the follow-up and oversight as well. So I don't want to, again, cast too general a statement. We're going to be auditing outdoor heritage funds, and we may come up with some issues there as well. But I think that the Lassard Council deserves some real credit for setting up a system that tries to address a lot of these issues. But, Mr. Chairman and members, I think it raises yet one other issue that I'll just very briefly mention, and that is, as Lessard, Sam's counsel really has a fairly tight definition and expectation for the use of legacy money out of the Outdoor Heritage Fund for administrative costs and overhead costs. I think there is a question of whether or not we're giving equitable treatment to organizations that are receiving money from the other three funds. So that is a question worth considering, because quite clearly, Lessard Council has said that out of the Outdoor Heritage money, organizations cannot use their appropriation for overhead institutional costs. You might want to visit. I know you don't want to spend a whole lot more time on this, but I know Mr. Becker is here and has thought through these issues, but Senator Ingebretson, I appreciate your reference to that document.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Ingebretson.
Just a follow-up then to that point, then, did we just not change that that policy yesterday in committee? Mr. Nobles, are you aware of that, that we changed that?
Mr. Chairman, I am not.
Maybe Mr. Konofsky.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebretson, basically, so far in the first three articles, you've adopted the House language that treats them all the same, that basically says that money appropriated in this article may not be spent on indirect costs or other institutional overhead charges that are not directly related to and necessary for a specific appropriation. So far, what you've done with the three articles is they're all going to be treated the same now.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am aware that was the House position.
They have adopted.
And because of, I think, some concern on the part of many of the House members about equitable treatment. But that hasn't and so I'm glad to hear that that's become the position of the Conference Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles, and thank you for your help in developing this over the session. We had several meetings on this, and you and nonpartisan staff and others have done a good job of putting this together, and we will closely monitor how it works. And I know you're closely monitoring it as well, and hopefully next year we'll see that it's operating the way we intend it to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Okay, Mr. Kudelka. Mr. Kudelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. We just wanted to highlight a little bit on this discussion while we had the opportunity earlier, and also reference our letter that we had sent on the 18th on some suggested language changes. Just want to make three points. From the discussion on this issue on what is supplanting and use of these funds incorrectly, it appears to be an issue much like art. You know it when you see it. Understand that, and we understand going through the audit process. Let's do that, and we have the documentation to explain our use of the dollars. But the complicating factor here, especially within the Clean Water Fund, we're starting to deal with programs that we do have that situation where they're talking about the.
Mr. Kudelka, you're talking to the mic a little bit more. You're cutting out. Thank you. We want to hear every word.
I apologize. Just in the situation where we have a program that may be funded through three different funds, currently one of those is our assessment and monitoring dollars. It's done by the general fund, the Clean Water Fund, and the Environmental Fund. And those situations where we have a person working on that project, we do time cards that split out their time and when they're on different types of projects. But when we start getting into the issue of using things such as the copier or a computer, it's much harder to put that detail down. When a person goes to the copier, they may be having funds from three sources to do the same type of program, because our programs are built so that they work off each other and use the funds in tandem to get the biggest bang for their buck. So when they walk up to that copier, the choice is which one code to put in, and it'll still allow for an accurate distribution of those issues. Our past history at the MPCA has found that we produced inaccurate results when we're dealing with things such as that regard, where it's that second level away from the actual person's time, and we've gone to the indirect system to allow for that, so that each fund on a certain program is a charge only their share of those things that are needed, such as IT services, HR, fiscal accounting, and our accountability systems, along with such thing as, again, HR. And that's how we have devised a system to allow that, and we will work with the auditor to explain that and have, and we'll continue to, on why that we feel that captures those costs in the most accurate situation. On our letter, we did make a suggestion on the appropriation funding on R69, House Section 23. The way that we read it, and we have a concern, is that it treats a use of an indirect system as we're guilty unless we can prove our innocence. We suggested a way to change the language in our letter on line 37.24, deleting must not and inserting may, and then on line 37.26, deleting the word not. It gives us in a situation where we would still need to have the information there explaining why the use of the indirect system still ensures that only those costs directly associated with things being funded by the Clean Water are being funded or being charged correctly, but it gets us out of the situation where we are technically, the way we see it, guilty until we can prove our innocence.
Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand some of your concerns, Mr. Kadelka, but I got to be honest, and Director Noble can tell me if I'm wrong here, but if you're making copies of a legacy project or a legacy proposal or something you're working on, that's a direct for that. I mean, otherwise you're charging a copy for legacy to the Environment Fund or something, and that's inappropriate. Now, I understand a single copy may not be able to, and you're going to have some flexibility, but if somebody's making copies for a legacy project, I guess if the agency wants to adopt a policy where we don't keep track of it, you'll just have to put it in however you allocate general overhead or whatever, but it would be inappropriate to charge somebody else for that. That would be my position.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kadelka, referring to that specific language change you had, I did review that when I got your letter, and it seemed like you were just eliminating a double negative and that the final product really, in my mind, meant the same thing as the original product. Can you enlighten me there a little bit?
Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, just to quick go back to the previous comment, on the issue of a project where it's a program, say it's water monitoring, or we're testing the quality of a water, that's one specific project, that has three sources of funding. And the way to distribute when those copies are necessarily put to one of the three funds, that's how we use our indirect to make sure that splits there. There isn't that clean cut, well, this is a project that is specifically all dollars granted from a clean water fund. Those are easy to track, and we acknowledge that. It's where we have those multiple funds going in for the same exact thing where it's not easy to split up, such as, say, water ambient water quality testing and such. To Representative Torkelson's question, we do believe it keeps the intent there, and I think it just, in some regards, again, falls in that situation where, again, cost must be directly related to the project and the clean water issue, and such that we still have to have that documentation there. The way it's written, we see that we're proving its indirect cost is ruled out, and that ability to use an indirect rate is ruled out entirely. The language we have would allow us to use the indirect rates, but still have to explain and justify why we use it. We still support the idea that only the cost directed. We don't want to fund all of our HR folks through the Clean Water Fund. In some regard, it may be comfort language, but it, in our eyes, it's an important difference.
Further discussion. Thank you, Mr. Kadelka. I will announce that we've been informed that a tornado has touched down, I believe, in St. Louis Park. It's kind of heading this way. Ramsey County has an alert. We are going to keep going unless we are informed that we need to do something different. If you want to, you know, if some of you care to go down in the basement or whatever, you're free to do so, obviously. So we'll just continue. You have been notified. Are there any other amendments? Any other amendments on Article 3? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair and members, I'd make a motion to approve Article 3 as amended.
See if anyone else wants to talk. I guess just if you'd withdraw that just a moment, please.
Sure.
If there is, I'd like to move this along now, but if there's anyone else in the public that wants to comment on anything.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if Director Nobles would allow me to ask one more question.
That's what she should have said.
Director Nobles, Mr. Chair, thank you. Director Nobles, indirect costs, what would be an example of an agency and indirect costs that we would say should not be applied to legacy, for instance? What would that include, potentially?
Well, Mr. Chairman, first let me start by, you know, there are various definitions of indirect costs, but generally speaking, whether you're dealing with the federal government or other definitions, it's things like rent, insurance, security costs that are normally there for an organization to open its doors every day. It's not project specific. That's why it's called indirect. But, Mr. Chairman, as long as Representative McNamara call me up, I think the important thing for you to consider and for the department, for the Pollution Control Agency to tell you, is the implications of their proposal, not just for a copy machine, but overall. If indirect costs are allowed within legacy for any of the organizations, how much money are we talking about? Are we talking about, you know, $25 for copying at the copy machine? Are we talking about hundreds of thousands? Are we talking about potentially millions of dollars that are being able to be paid for out of legacy money for indirect costs? I think you need to know that before you feel any level of comfort that you want indirect costs to be charged to legacy money, because we're talking about a lot more than just copy machines.
We need to move on pretty soon here. Representative McNamara.
And thank you, Director Nobles. I think that helps a lot to lay out those parameters about rent and utility bills, which are fixed. And they were, say, a certain amount. And just by now having legacy doesn't automatically mean that you should be able to divide those up, because there's been no new cost. As you said, it's different than the copy scenario. But if the building is this big and it hasn't changed and you still have all that, now, short of, I would imagine, if you were in a building where your plan was, because you weren't using this space anymore and you were giving it back to the landlord and they were going to, you know, rent it out to some accounting firm or something, and now you have to keep it because you got these legacy people there, I don't believe that's what you're talking about.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, I think you lay out a very good scenario and of the difference. So I think, again, you are tracking very consistent with the way we are on these issues. And, I mean, certainly one of the expectations that I think you would have of us, that we have of ourselves, is that we apply standards and make judgments that are reasonable. That's part of our job, too. And so I would hope that whatever we come back with in terms of our judgments, you may disagree and agencies may disagree, in part because I think there are differing ways to look at some of these questions. But we will certainly apply a standard that is reasonable, we think, from our point of view.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Anyone else? Senator Peterson?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, I'll renew my motion to approve Article 3 as amended.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Well,
aye.
I'm sorry.
I missed the cutoff.
Yeah. Those in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Must be the poll between us. I didn't see it. All right. Moving to Article 4.
R-77.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, before doing Article 4, if I could indulge the chair as well as the committee to move back to the side-by. We have one concern that I think we should deal with here. We did adopt the House language on page R-31 for members, if they want to look that up quick. And I guess I would at the very least open it up for discussion and would like to have that removed. I think the language that's covered on the Senate side would more than broadly cover the aquatic invasive species when you're talking about restoring, protecting, and enhancing not only game, fish, and wildlife, but also prairies, wetlands, and habitat for fish. Habitat for fish is very clear that is covered in the basically the somewhat of the constitutional amendment language. So to put aquatic invasives in there would be, I think, somewhat redundant. If you're going to do that, I guess what I'm saying is what's going to be next, I guess, would we be talking about looking at game? Would we be looking at some kind of an invasive species for game? Would we have to address that later? What I'm saying is that the language we have on the Senate side it covers everything with regards to wetlands, prairies, forest, and habitat for fish and wild game. So, members, I guess I know aquatic invasives is certainly the hot topic here in St. Paul this year, and we're dealing with that with a separate bill. In fact, I think its last stop is in the House right now. And I guess I would like to see that taken out. So I would move to take that out and have Mr. Knopf be more specific with the language or make sure that it's covered over on the existing language, or if just taking that out would cover it. That would be my motion.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think what you're talking about, if you look on R31, you look at 32.15 to 32.16 on the House side, and what was adopted yesterday was the council may consider prevention measures to protect fish from aquatic invasive species consistent with the Constitution or protect habitat for fish. And what you're saying is we did restore some language on the Senate side when that was adopted. So if you look on the House side, it's everything up until wildlife on 3213. So the existing law and what you've adopted will still say, in making recommendations, the council shall consider a range of options that would best restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forest habitats, fish game, and wildlife. So that you've got the broad statement in there, but you don't have anything specific for any other types of activity, and this would put a specific activity in there.
Exactly. That was my concern, a specific activity. Hunting opportunity would be the next. So that would be my motion, would be to delete lines 3215 and 3216. Excuse me, and help me with that. I think that's the two lines.
Yep.
Up to the council on 16.
This is a provision by Representative Ward. It was important to him. So I'll just put that out there. Any further discussion?
So,
yes.
Representative
Murphy.
Mr. Chair, then, are we deleting everything from 3211 to 3217?
Mr. Knopf?
Or 16?
Mr. Chair and members, based on the amendments that were adopted yesterday, the oral amendments to the two sides, what you've adopted is you would keep the sentence that starts on 3211 all the way through wildlife on 3213, but none of the rest of it on the House side through 3216, the period, would be included, would be a part of the way the law would read now. So it would just, why don't I just read, I mean, all you would say in this sentence or this part would be, in making recommendations, the council shall consider a range of options that would best restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. That would be the sentence. And then, and you wouldn't have the invasive species part, or you wouldn't have anything after that. That's how it will read based on what the conference committee has adopted, and if the Ingebrigtsen Amendment were to pass and remove that part on the aquatic invasive species.
Further discussion? Those in favor of the Ingebrigtsen Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carried. Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I did have one more question in Article 3 on R-72. Did we adopt the House language about payments to Conservation Corps and then the paragraph after that?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, no. That was not part of the GK-018 amendment.
Okay.
It had not been discussed.
Okay, and I did not realize we went beyond that. That was because we had a delete all for Article 3, right?
Right.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I was thinking there was an amendment out about this final paragraph, and I would like to go back to Article 3 on R-72, and I would like to move from line 67-19 down to 68.2, with one oral amendment on 67.23, change both of the millions to $500,000. This would make a minimum it would reduce the minimum work with Conservation Corps, but we did adjust the DNR number, so I think that would be appropriate to adjust this number, yet it would still show a commitment to Conservation Corps. And then I would like to adopt that following paragraph. I think that's consistent with some of the work we would like DNR to do. And, Mr. Chair, I think it would be important. I don't know if Mr. Price is here today. I think we want DNR to work with Conservation Corps. And if we have not adopted any of this paragraph, I think we should reach at least some of that. And then that next paragraph, I think, is an important planning paragraph.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
I would like to divide that if I could. And Representative McNamara, by way of amendment, divide it from the line 67-25 to 68-22, that last paragraph, basically. Separate that.
Vote separately
on what? Paragraph E and F.
And
that would be it.
And Mr. Chair, I'm fine with voting on them one at a time.
Okay, so let's take them one at a time.
If you want just a motion, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'll withdraw my motion. And if you want to make a motion, which one do you want to do first?
Senator McNamara withdraws his motion. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
We'll do paragraph E first, Mr. Chair.
Paragraph E first?
As modified.
That's correct.
With the $500,000 taking the place of the $1 million. All right. Discussion? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, where is the money coming from? Is it already on our spreadsheet?
Yes.
Is it on the bottom line?
It's not.
Mr. Soderbergh?
Mr. Chairman, it's of the money that's being appropriated to the commissioner in this section or this article. It would be of this amount.
Yes. Thank you.
It's not new money.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the Conservation Corps has done really good work in cooperation with the DNR. And I think this is just showing a minimal commitment to that group. And so I would appreciate members' support.
Further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Now the second part. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
You're not moving.
I'm not going to move.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would move
McNamara.
Paragraph F on R-72.
Look at that.
That's the second half of my original amendment.
You want to speak to it?
Actually, Mr. Chair, if possible, I'd like the DNR just to tell us quick what this paragraph's about.
Mr. Bowe.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to be here again. And for the record, Forrest Bowe, Deputy Director of the Parks and Trails Division. We've been working throughout the session with a group of Greater Minnesota, Met Council, and DNR folks. And this is one of the items that has come out of that particular work, getting together to further the legacy plan. And this was some language that the House had adopted in one of their earlier bills.
Representative Torkelson.
No, thank you.
Oh, you were just moving. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Bowe. With regards to the makeup of the commission, so that would be, if that were done, it would be three from Metro, three from DNR, and three from rural. Is that correct? I'm sorry, I was busy talking. You might have already said that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, that is correct. And the idea here is that our Commissioner of Natural Resources, the Commissioner of the Met Council, and the head of the Greater Minnesota Group would appoint those three members from each of those groups to basically do this work. So kind of a triumvirate that would commission this group to work on this issue.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm wondering the need. Can you tell me the need for this? I mean, what are we trying to fix here that to better understand, and maybe the members to better understand what you see the importance of this?
Mr. Ball?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this is important, and this has really got to do with implementing this legacy plan that we worked so hard on. And quite frankly, I think this is probably where we get at many of the answers as to future allocations, have this group work together, come up with some recommendations for the legislature on future allocations.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. And a follow-up. So you'd also be talking about future percentages here is what we're talking about, so everybody understands that. Is that correct?
Mr. Ball?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, that's correct. Future allocations and priorities throughout the state.
Senator Peterson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, this is precisely that brought us into the discussion that we have had here extensively through the hearing process about fairness. Obviously, if you can picture three DNR representatives, three representatives from Metro Parks, and again, three representatives from Greater Minnesota, you can see how the vote is going to go. It's going to be 6-3 against Greater Minnesota, as it has been leading up to this point. So I would urge members to vote against this amendment. But Mr. Chair, if there's anybody else besides the DNR that wishes to speak on this issue, I certainly would like them to have the same opportunity as the DNR. So
certainly.
Another question. I'm sorry.
Question.
Oh, go ahead.
Question. Mr. Bowe, you have a question?
I thought there was, he was asking him a question. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bowe, would you be willing to? And I share Senator Peterson's concerns here with regards to rural. I mean, that's obviously the contention that's been going on here now for some time, and I nobody likes this, and we just want to make sure that things are done fair. I guess I'll throw this out to the member to have a unanimous vote on moving forward to these types of things with the committee. All nine people agree on projects.
Mr. Bowe?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I don't know that we were getting down to the project level where we would agree on projects. But I think it was an opportunity to get everyone together. And my interest in this, I think, is to get to some consensus, build consensus around this issue and not have it come to a vote. And, of course, all of these people would then report back to their respective commissioners, and the commissioners then would carry that forward.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Tom Landwehr, I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Members, I had suggested that we would want to include this in here for a couple of reasons. One is that I don't think that we've had a good discussion historically, or to date, I should say, among those interested parties about how to proceed forward with suggesting, recommending to you what allocations ought to be. I thought this was a good step towards getting to that point. The alternative, of course, is to have it here in front of you each and every year, and I'm not sure if that's the best idea. So I think the intention was to give you some recommendations about how you might consider looking at the three entities of this interest and try to bring you a deliberative, unbiased discussion from the three interested parties.
Questions? Comments? Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, I have a comment. And I think this might have come in to the House positions partly as a result of the excellent job the Citizens Committee and DNR Parks and Trails did in the past interim, in which when they went statewide with the plan and getting citizen input. And at first, after the first citizen meeting, I was kind of irritated because it seemed to me that the Department, Natural Resources, Parks and Trails, and the Citizens League presentation to the citizens that showed up at these Parks and Trails meetings were not telling a clear story of the difference between DNR principles and the legacy principles, namely the supplant. They couldn't supplant in what the Constitution said, and they were...
So what does consensus mean?
But as the meetings continued around the state and more people seemed to show up at the meetings, it seemed to me that they were reaching conclusions on what the priorities of the people were. And although they weren't separating them for legacy money and DNR money, they were listening to the people and putting forth a priority list from the people to make further plans and suggestions and priorities to the legislature, to the governor, to the commissioner. And so I decided it was a pretty good progress, and I attended several of these meetings in northern Minnesota. And I felt that the people's opinions were vetted very well. And then I came to the legislature this year, and it seemed to be that we were talking about not what the people's priorities were as much as what the established agency or established parks percentages had been and what they were going to get. And then there was the new group of the regional parks that were trying to get access to us. And you use some words like nobody's happy, and I don't think they are. But I think this group, with more talking and another round of discussion, is going to make people more comfortable in talking, and then they will become more representative of who they're trying to represent. And if we're not listening with the sense that we have to take sides, they could be a valuable tool to us for the next round of appropriations 2 years hence. I think this is worth a try to continue, and that the next round then might not be as divisive, because people will be more comfortable, more trusting, and the people will have a chance to be heard more than they have been. Those are my comments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy, and I agree, and I think the two gentlemen at the other end know that this is a work in progress, and I think you very well described the work in progress. We need to somehow narrowly get it to where it works the best, but you certainly would agree with me, I think. Thanks. If we were to talk about a consensus, I mean, you would still have to have a consensus. In other words, two from each group. Two of the three from each group would have to agree on something, because you do have to eventually move forward with some ideas. Mm-hmm. So,
and
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, I think that last year we had several reports from several other groups that were delivering what the last legislation did about the legacy money, and several reports. The reports were different than what I had anticipated when we asked for them, and for them to develop the framework for the next 25 years, what was going to happen. The reports were different in a couple cases than what I expected, and weren't as prescribed as I thought that they would be. But the people that worked together statewide in developing the framework and the report all contributed a lot. And I shouldn't have expected a prescriptive answer. And I think that the best thing was that they worked together and they came in from different viewpoints and they came to understand each other. And then they presented their product to us. And we did with it. We'll continue to use it as they presented it. And I think that was a value for us and will help us in predicting or appropriating legacy funds in the future, because the framework is there now and the guide is there. And the parks and trails are a little bit behind because of what we did in the first year. And it's going to come into its own in the next 2 years, in my opinion, from my experience.
So if I could just ask one question, Representative. So then you think the framework is already there and it's working fine? Is that what I'm hearing?
For where we asked for framework and where we asked for reports. But as I said, I think Parks and Trails is about a year behind of the other funds. I think
So each
of the other funds has a year ahead, mm-hmm. and whereas Parks and Trails is kind of behind because we didn't appropriate the same way for Parks and Trails from the beginning.
So back to my observation then of your comments would be then that to the amendment to paragraph F, you would like to see you would like to see probably that not adopted and the system that's in place now to work at least one more cycle? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not. I'm saying I think that this would be a strength for the future if we keep this in there.
I was misreading you. I'm sorry.
And if you want to put a consensus, if you want to assure that there's a consensus, that I don't care about that. I mean, that's fine.
First, have you added consensus yet?
No, we haven't.
Senator Nelson?
Mr. Chair, well, if you want to take the consensus point first and act on that, fine. Mike, I have a different comment.
Oh, let's do the consensus point first. Do you want anyone wish to do that?
I would make that motion to do consensus in two different places and let Mr. Knopf.
I'll lay somewhere. Mr. Chair, it would be an amendment to the McNamara motion.
Right.
And it would be on 67.27, after develop, insert consensus, and also on 67.33, after the, insert consensus. So it would be to develop consensus recommendations, and the consensus recommendation shall be submitted no later than.
Okay. Those in favor, say aye. Or the discussion? Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment to the amendment is adopted. Now, before Senator Carlson, why did I do that? Nelson. Oh, Scandinavian people.
Is there anybody else other than Scandinavian?
Probably not. I'll just comment briefly that apparently the tornado has gone by, but it did manage to visit our researcher David Strom's property. And apparently put a tree on his house or something along those lines. So our thoughts are with him as he has left to tend to that. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl. My comment was just the fact that the great discussion we've had about these appropriations in the last couple days have been very public and very transparent. And my only concern was that making these type of allocation decisions in a working group of nine people is not nearly as transparent and public as the process we went through in the last couple days.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I assume that DNR is going to be the lead person to have a listserv on this issue. And that we'll be calling the working group. Was that your assumption, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I honestly hadn't gone that far in my thinking about how this would function, but we would be glad to do that. My intention was more that we would bring a recommendation to you on process, not on projects, so that you would then have that opportunity to take that process to decide about projects. And if I could back up just a little bit, the genesis of this was that when I came out of this job, I was of the understanding that there was an agreement in place among the parties interested in the Parks and Trails funding. And I found out after I came on board that wasn't as solid as I'd been led to believe. So my thought was, well, we should get the parties together and talk about this, or just lay it back on your doorstep and let you all decide it on a biennial basis. So I thought, in my mind, this was a better alternative to give you something that had some thoughtful deliberation to it in terms of a process so that we could minimize the amount of time that you all had to spend trying to get to the same point that I hope that we get to.
Representative Murphy?
That being said, Mr. Chair, I assume that representatives are going to be very interested in this working group in addition to the 333, and that people that are interested in the legacy funds for parks and trails, especially local parks and trails groups, would be interested in following the agendas of these committees and participate in the agendas of these committees, and that we should all get onto the listserv and be notified when these meetings, working group meetings, are going to take place and speak up at them.
Further discussion? Senator Engelbert?
To that point, then, maybe, Commissioner, you can help us with that. Would it be, if this were to pass, would it be on your website available to the public, the meetings?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm absolutely fine with that. I'm not familiar with the technology of listservs or how we develop the database and so on, but it absolutely can be an open meeting in one of the DNR conference rooms, and whoever wants to attend certainly could.
Further discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Now, Article 4. Do we have to adopt it again? Mr. Sullivan, do you care to go through this for us?
Mr. Chair and members, the appropriations that the committee is considering are on the spreadsheet, the one May 21st at 2:09 p.m. The Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund is on the bottom of page 6, so I'm just going to step through the side-by-side and point out the language that corresponds to the spreadsheet.
Hey, we have a new spreadsheet coming.
Amendment first, or change? There's supposed to be something.
I think what we'll do is have Mr. Mueller point out the spreadsheet differences quickly. Then we'll go back to Mr. Sullivan.
Are you going to go through it?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, this new spreadsheet dated today, it's 1:46 p.m., 5:22, and at the top on the conference, it says conference agreement, Roman numeral 1. There's one change. As far as a descriptive change under clean water, I put it under the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I changed the line 144. It's just a changing of the name of the tracking of the appropriation line. It used to be called cost share grants, but in discussion with Bowser, they said a better description would be surface and drinking water grants. So that's relabeled. The other change is in Article 4, dealing with the Board of the Arts. It's on page 6. There are some new numbers on line 231. It's an additional $150,000 in fiscal year 12 and $450,000 in fiscal year 13 compared to the last spreadsheet. And that came off the bottom line. You'll see now the fund balance for the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund on the last page is down to 1.3% the first year and 1.9% the second year. And that's the only change.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I have
Senator Engelbretson?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mueller, we were busy in talking here. The final one on page 8, what was the final change on page 8?
Mr. Chairman, compared to basically it was an extra $600,000 off the bottom line, and now the fund balance that you see on 324, you'll see a new fund balance for the Arts and Culture Heritage Fund, which is $600,000 less than the previous spreadsheet. So it brings the fund balance down to 1.9% in the fiscal year 13. It used to be 3%.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mueller. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, on the side-by-side, the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund language begins on page R76. I'm going to point out language on either the House or the Senate side that corresponds with the programs funded in the spreadsheet, and there's also an A32 amendment that staff put together to add new language where neither the House nor the Senate has language to match the spreadsheet.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, on R76, I would pick up the House language on the right-hand side because the formatting for appropriations and administration is consistent throughout all four articles with the House language. On R77, I'm going to continue with the House language for the total appropriation and the State Arts Board. That continues on 78, take the House language on the right column still. On R79, the last provision, Arts and Cultural Heritage at the top, is still the Arts Board. That would be House language. And then you see on the right-hand side, the House language, 72.21, the agreement in the spreadsheet or what the committee is considering is to go with the House proposal to run the appropriations, the grants to libraries, through the Department of Education according to an existing statutory formula. And the Senate proposal was to have a competitive library grants program through the Board of Arts. And the last piece, then, on the House side, just pick up House language again and administration, fiscal oversight, those are the same. And one small difference still on R79, the House has a continuation of a census, an artist census, that the Arts Board compiled. It was required under the 2009 law. Here it just says that the Arts Board shall maintain that census. The Senate doesn't have that comparable language. I don't know. Can just move on for now and come back to that if members want to discuss that item. So on the bottom of R79, to pick up the House language for the Historical Society in the right-hand column, all of R80. There are a couple differences. Again, in the Senate language, it says if a project receives federal funds, the time period is extended to equal the availability of those funds. That's in the House overall rider language. So pick up the House language on the right side. On R81, continue with the House language. I understand there's a very minor difference between the House and Senate that the Historical Society believes it's a technical difference, and they prefer the House language. If members want to hear more about that, it's Mr. Kelleher. And then the bottom of R81 begins the Department of Administration. Take the Senate language. And again, on the top of R82, pick up the Senate language down through public television, and that's where the A32 amendment would come in, because the Senate has direct appropriations to Minnesota Public Television Association. Actually, I'm sorry, pick up the Senate language for public television. That would be in the conference committee's proposal. Then the radio is where the first change would take place. So the A32 amendment would create a public radio competitive grants program. Members have the amendment. That's the first item on the A32 amendment. It's the new public radio competitive grants program. So that would go in place of direct appropriations to NPR and AMPRS. Okay, on R83, pick up the Senate language with the direct appropriations to the Como and Lake Superior Zoos. And then there's a change in the R32 for the Children's Museums item on the Senate side. That would be a direct appropriation only to the Minnesota Children's Museum. And there would be the creation of a Children's Museum competitive grants program that other children's museums could apply to under the Department of Administration. So that's the Children's Museum piece. Again, on R83, pick up the Senate appropriation of the Science Museum of Minnesota, the last rider, R83. And on R84, pick up the Senate language for the appropriation to the Minnesota Film and TV Board. And on the right-hand side of R84, then, you see the House funds a State Capital Preservation Commission that's also created in the House bill for $550,000 for a pre-designed plan. So that would be included, the House language. Down onto R85, the Senate language for the appropriation to the Minnesota Zoo. on 70.7 through 70.11, and the Senate language for the beginning of the Humanities Center appropriation on R85, 70.12 through 70.20. The R86. Pick up the Senate language again on the top of R86, 70.21 through 70.24, and then continue with the Senate language for the Councils of Color. Those are the same on both the House and Senate side. And then there's a change to the civics education item on the Senate side, also in the A32. Instead of specifying recipients of that money, there would be a competitive grants program. That's on the second page of the A32 amendment, lines 2.14. 2.21. And on to R87 then, take the Senate appropriation to the Perpich Center for Arts Education, and the Senate language at the bottom of that page for the grants program through the Department of Agriculture. R88, all the Senate language would be included, the continuation of the Department of Agriculture County Fair grants, and then the Indian Affairs Council appropriations. Those appropriations continue onto the top of R89. And then we get to the item for Veterans Affairs, skip over to the House language. Yeah, the House language, because those would be grants administered by the Department of Administration rather than the Department of Veterans Affairs. And then the legislature, the appropriation to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for the legacy reporting website, that language is the same. So you could take the Senate language on that item. And then, again, you can pick up House language, establishing a state capital preservation commission.
Excuse me, Mr. Sullivan. Before you get into the, you said House language on the veterans camps? Yeah, that would be, I'm sorry.
The numbers.
These numbers would, the spreadsheet numbers would be the right ones.
Right. Yeah, continue. Mr. Chair, that's correct. And the order is sort of moved around here, so these two match up. But, yeah, it would be the numbers on the spreadsheet as a grant from the Department of Administration.
Right.
And on the bottom of R89, the State Capitol Commission, this is language that was only in the House bill, but it was reviewed by Senate Counsel and Research, and the language that you see before you contains changes that were recommended by Senate Counsel. Creates the membership for the Capitol Commission, specifies terms and compensation, officers and meetings, administrative support, and then on the bottom, on R91, Subdivision 6 starts the duties for the new Capitol Commission. Those continue all through R92 and all the way through R93 as well. There are duties given to the Capital Architecture and Planning Board and the Commissioner of Administration pertaining to the Capital Commission. It's on R93. On R94, then the top of that page on the House side, down through Clause 7 on 83.5, that's additional Capital Commission language. Then there's a House-only provision that's on 83.6 through 83.2. It has to do with Minnesota Public Television Association and what access they have to give educational institutions to the programs that they produce and create with legacy money. Then on to R95, the language is the same on the House and Senate side. There are some minor changes to the reporting requirements for AMPRS and Minnesota Public Television Association regarding legacy funds. On the bottom of R95 on the House side is more of the Capitol Commission language. This gives duties to the Minnesota Historical Society, who would also be involved in the commission. On R96, the top, Section 10, that is House-only language that essentially extends the existence of the Indian Affairs Council Language Working Group that otherwise was set to expire or already expired on February 16th. That group would receive an appropriation to continue their work in this bill, so the House language would push back that expiration date for that group. And then, again, as with all the other funds, the other three funds, I would pick up the House language on availability of appropriations to capture the administration language and the treatment of cancellation of appropriations. And the final item for Article 4 is, again, with the State Capitol Commission. It's a non-codified language to set a deadline for appointments for the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. And just as a word of note here, the Senate goes into session at 4, and they would like the senators to be there. So we're going to try to move this along. House also gets into session at 4. They kind of want us to be there, but not as much as the Senate wants the senators. Colby. Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. On the 832, working in consultation with Senate staff, it was noted that in the Senate bill, the public radio grants had the same appropriation availability as the public TV grants that is available until June 30th, 2015. That doesn't show up in the 832. It shows up for the public TV grants. You can see on the top of page 2, but not for the public radio grants. So for your consideration would be to have that same appropriation availability for the public radio competitive grants. I can read an oral amendment.
Yes.
Okay. On page 1, line 17 of the 832 amendment, after the period, insert, this appropriation is available until June 30th, 2015.
That will be part of the amendment that's offered. Right. Anything else, Mr. Sullivan? Okay, then we will consider Amendment A32 on line 1.3, page 74 is page 75. Change 74 to 75. I'm going to take members first, Mr. Tilley. Discussion, comments? Mr. Tilley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Barry Tilley. I represent the Association of Public Educational Radio Stations. And on the A32 Amendment for Public Radio Grants, I've conferred with Minnesota Public Radio. And if at all possible, we would like to have this section address the eligibility requirements in 129D. There are many, many public radio stations in Minnesota that have never participated in these grants. Even MnDOT, when they have road construction projects, they put up signs, say, tune your radio to this. That's a public radio station. And we don't think you intend to make these grants available to those type of stations. And there's many very small, low-power, half-a-watt stations that broadcast for just a few blocks. That I'm sure you don't intend to have qualify for these grants. And if you could cite the eligibility requirements in 129D, it would be a way of determining that there is a real radio station that would be eligible for these grants. That would have financial responsibilities, audit requirements, those sort of things.
Mr. Tilley, if we could do that, would you either write that down or if it's, I think that might, do we have that anywhere, this amendment he's proposing?
Mr. Chair, yes, I have the language for the amendment.
If you want to give it to me, I offered the amendment, I would accept it.
Mr. Chair, in reviewing the language for the amendment, I had a question about if Chapter 129D, the language in there, would also apply to Minnesota Public Radio, who the Senate position had an appropriation to. It wasn't clear to me initially that it was, and I know that the two parties were working on that, and perhaps the representative from NPR has some more information on that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members, Christine Almeida, representing Minnesota Public Radio. We did have a discussion about this earlier. The section that Mr. Tilley and Mr. Sullivan referenced is 129D.14 Subdivision 3, which lays out a number of different criteria for eligibility for these grants. We believe that it would apply to both AMPRS and to NPR, so that would be fine.
Mr. Chair, yes. Members, for the record, my name is Alyssa Haugen, Director of the Office of Grants Management, which is part of the Department of Administration. We currently administer the public broadcasting grants, and to confirm, yes, 129D does apply to both Minnesota Public Radio and to AMPRS.
And you would be fine with this amendment then?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, we are in support of the amendment.
Could we have the amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment then would be on the A32 line, page 1, line 9. after public radio stations, insert that satisfy the eligibility criteria in Minnesota Statutes, Section 129D.14, Subdivision 3.
Discussion on that amendment. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Yes. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Sullivan, does the language that you suggested for public radio or and the ampers all comply then with A32 and the worksheet and the spreadsheet? Does this all follow now? We don't have any contradictory language from the side by side to A32?
Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I don't believe so. The A32 would replace the existing public radio language with the new language in the A32. And what the amendment that was just considered would do would be to more closely define exactly who is eligible for the public radio competitive grants.
This establishes a little bit different criteria. Further discussion. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the Senate position strongly supported NPR and AMPRS, and I understand there might have been some difficulty with that in the House, but I think with the A32 as amended, with the eligibility requirements, I think that we can support this. So thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Conference Committee, I'm Bill Strasinski, representing the Minnesota Public Television Association today. I would just like to request the Conference Committee consider one particular item on line point 126 of the amendment, prescribing specifically at least 2 hours of new programming may be a bit problematic. I just haven't had a chance to deal with our folks too much on it. We do know what some television programs cost and depends upon level or what have you. We would feel we understand the direction you're trying to go with this. We recognize that. We will produce some programming on sesquicentennial American Civil War. If you consider at least removing at least 2 hours shall produce new, I think that would be much more easier for us to deal with. I mean, you might very well get 2 hours. I just don't know. Some television programming, national quality programming, for example, can cost as much as $400,000 an hour by the time we get everything done. So we would feel better if you at least would consider. We understand the intent. We commit to do that, but if you'd rather encourage us to do that, but at least delete at least, 2 hours. And just if you delete it on line point 126, at least 2 hours, I think we understand what you're trying to accomplish there, and we would be okay with that.
All right.
Term, you probably will get 2 hours. I'm not sure, but that's a bit prescriptive at this point in the time for me. Thank you.
At least I move for my amendment to delete at least 2 hours of.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
On line 126, I have expectations. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Good thing. You'll be happy. All right. Yeah, I think we're done. What? No, right now. We'll now move to the amendment 832 unless there's further discussion. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Oh, wait a second. Yeah, I can do that. It passed. It passed. I have one question on the libraries. Is that is the House position in, or do we have to move that?
We have the House position.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and members, the House position is in the spreadsheet and in the language I described.
All right, good.
Then, perfect. Then.
Yes.
That's in there.
Other amendments? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of A14.
14 has been moved. It's coming out. This deals with the Perpich. Did you care to comment, Representative Murphy? We have Mr. Harris here, too, from Perpich.
Mr. Chair, the Arts Board will collaborate with the Perpich Center for Arts Education.
Any discussion on this? Senator Nelson?
Mr. Chair, members, I support this amendment. The Perpich Center for the Arts is the arts education, the state arts education head, and so I support this amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Engelbrechtson?
Mr. Chair, is there somebody that would like to discuss this from either one?
I see some Perpich people. Welcome. Identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Pam Paulson. I serve as the Senior Director of Policy for the Perpich Center for Arts Education. And I think there are three important reasons why the Perpich Center and the Arts Board should collaborate on the section that deals with the academic standards and school districts. The first reason is that that is the area of expertise and experience that the Perpich Center brings to the Legacy Project. We have as a mission and as a state agency the charge to be working with academic standards, assessments, and curriculum. And I think that this would actually strengthen the projects that happen in the schools if our expertise could be brought to bear in these school districts. Second, we don't want to duplicate in this time of very short budgets and tight money. I think it would be best if we could find a way to make sure that we're not duplicating with what each other is doing. The Perpich Center has just completed or is working on a statewide survey of what's going on, the status of arts education in the schools, and we could share all of that information about where there's the greatest need and the greatest strengths with the Arts Board. And finally, the third point is that we already have a collaboration going on with the Arts Board in regard to the Comprehensive Arts Planning Program, and that could serve as a model for us to collaborate on implementation of the academic standards.
Members, any questions? Thank you very much. Any further questions on the Murphy Amendment, the A14 Amendment? Members, any thoughts or any questions on that? Hearing none to the Murphy Amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Would you like to continue, or are we finished? I forget.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment.
Okay.
A18.
A18 amendment. We'll get that handed out.
And Mr. Chair, while that's being handed out, maybe I could do an oral amendment on.
Senator Nelson, is it to this amendment? Let's deal with the amendment first.
The A18, then.
We don't seem to have it here. Does anybody? We're searching.
Yes. Would you like me to speak to it while it's being prepared?
Yeah, that's okay with the committee. Go ahead.
All right. Committee members, this amendment deals with the Capitol Commission. And if you'd like, I can maybe – you'll get all the language in front of you, but maybe I can just tell you a little bit about what it's about. You'll be looking in the – let's see. It starts on page R76. I'll just kind of tell you about that.
Senator Nelson, to your amendment.
The amendment comes in different parts. You'll see that as it's written, because it's written in different parts of the side-by-side here, starting with page 76. But basically, my amendment deletes all of the study and infrastructure language. Currently, that has already been done. Members, this would be redundant to what has already been done. The admin department has already done the study for the structure, and the Met Council has already done a study for the structure as well, as far as infrastructure. And I serve on the CAP board. We've been spending a lot of time with these studies already, so this would just be using legacy funds to do something that has already been done. And I do believe we might have some members from either the CAP board or admin who might testify to this.
Members, have we found the... have we found the amendment yet?
Who prepared it?
Senator Nelson, there might be some confusion here. We may be dealing with the A21 amendment.
Oh, mine said A18, but maybe there's an A21, which I'll be glad to look at it. And my A18 just walked out the door, so let's take a look at that. No, this is not the correct amendment. Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment until the copies come back.
All right. You have another oral amendment?
I do.
I thought we were just going to do away with this.
But I'm going to wait on that until the amendment comes back.
Senator Engelbretz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Nelson, if I might, you talked about your amendment addressing A76. Maybe we can do it by way of oral. I'm not sure, but maybe counsel can help us here.
Mr. Chair,
are you wanting to delete in a paragraph? I'm sorry.
I'm afraid that I gave my amendment. Do you have my original one? I don't have all the numbers memorized, I'm afraid.
You could probably talk.
Who's got? Okay, let's. Mr. Chair, could we turn it over to Mr. W from admin?
Mr. W from admin.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Wayne Wislowski. I'm the Director of Real Estate and Construction Services within the Department of Administration. The first change is on page R84. It would delete lines 76.5 through line 76.29. And then that carries over to the page R85, and it would delete line 76.30 to finish out that paragraph. That's the first part of the change. The second part is under R92. It deletes starting on line 81.13 and deletes through 81.24. And then on R94, it deletes starting on line 82.32 and then deletes through 83.3. I believe that reflects the amendment.
Do we have that?
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Is that the amendment you're moving, Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Senator Nelson moves the amendment. Discussion.
We have a better description.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so all this work has already been done?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy.
Mr. W.
On the structural risk assessment, there's interpret that two ways. One is the exterior condition assessment that's being done on the marble stone. And that has been ongoing since November, when the Department of Administration is completing a comprehensive assessment of the exterior stone this summer. And I'll turn it over to Jed to talk about the work that the Met Council did related to vibration assessment with respect to LRA.
Excuse me.
Representative Murphy.
To save time, Mr. Chair, could you tell me what's left then for the $500,000 to be spent on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the original scope, that was part of the issue, the original scope is to complete a comprehensive redesign for the restoration of the Capitol building. That was the $550,000 that was originally, that's the original purpose for that funding.
Tell me what's Mr. Chair, sir.
Representative Murphy.
Will you please tell me what's included in the comprehensive redesign?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the pre-design will cover the scope of the restoration project. It'll identify what works needs to be done, what systems need to be replaced. It'll also identify what changes, if any, are needed in the space itself. It'll come up with cost estimates for that work, and it'll also come up with a proposed schedule to phase that work in.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
This cost estimate to phase the work, then will that be establishing priorities?
Sir.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, yes, it will.
Mr. Chair, will we be hiring an architect or a particular firm with this money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, there will be a competition to hire an architectural firm to prepare that pre-design.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, was it your intent that before the priorities are established by the legislature, that a firm and competition would take place before we established the priorities?
I'm sorry, Representative Murphy. I really hadn't thought about which would be better, what the ramifications were. What would you think?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murray, that is the normal phasing of our projects under our capital projects under our statute. You start with the pre-design phase, which is really the planning phase where all the stakeholders are involved in that process, and on the commission are the members from the House and Senate, as well as the executive and judicial branches. So all those stakeholders are together establishing the priorities for the restoration of the building. As part of that, we'll come to you with, here's the condition of the building. Here's the systems that are beyond their useful life to be replaced. That then the commission will be able to evaluate the systems that need to be replaced, as well as any additional changes to space to set the priority.
So when would the architectural firm be hired in that process?
Mr. Chair, it would start right away. As soon as this funding is in place and the part of the Preservation Commission provides input on that selection of that tool.
Anything else for the discussion on this amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
The last sentence is what bothers me because of some of the people that have been on the board before and still are, that we have had this process before and then a plan is developed and then the legislature doesn't, or the bonding committee or somebody doesn't put up the money for it. And
this time
so
we really
apart.
Mean it, though.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I think it goes one step too far.
Okay. Do you have a suggestion?
No, but maybe Senator Nelson does because it's her amendment.
Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, well, I think it's important to have good planning before we come to the legislature. My intent is, and I want to thank the chairs for including this. I had this language on the Senate side, and I'm very glad that it made it here into conference committee. My intent is that we do have this comprehensive plan so that we can bring a coordinated, well-researched, well-documented plan to the legislature. You know, we know as we walk into this building every day, we're walking under scaffolding. And those of us who come here every day know that that's not for maintenance. That's because pieces of the Capitol are falling off. It's a liability issue. And I just think it's high time that we get a very structured plan and direction in how we are going to maintain this marvelous structure. I mean, this is the people's house, and if there was ever anything that we should be making sure exists for our heritage is this Capitol building. So that's the intent of this piece of legislation.
Senator Nelson, I realize that, and I've been on the last committee that was going to solve all the problems, but yet we went into no definite decisions being made also because.
I just say that, and it's been, you know, this is my ninth year here, and probably every one of those years people have been talking about doing something. I've taken a couple of tours in the bowels of the Capitol mm-hmm. building, and certainly something needs to be done. But I think it's becoming more apparent to people now as we have canopies over the doors and scaffolding all around that something really does have to be done. And as you say, if we can't protect the state's number one building, I don't know what we can protect, enhance. And
Mr. Chair, I totally agree with you, and I totally agree with the importance of this building and preservation of this building. But we also have to come to the reality of what's really been holding things back.
That'd be us not doing them.
Who's going to be present in this building? Who's going to have an office in this building and who isn't? And who is it the people's building or is it the senator's building or is it the three branches building? And those questions really have to be talked about before you talk about saving the building, because if they're going to come with a pre-design that says all the senators' spots will be saved and we're going to move the lieutenant governor or somebody out and so forth to make more space for the 21st century, those are the underlying things that always stops the discussions.
Right, well,
and the CAP board has been, this is probably going to be their 18th time with a new plan. And we still don't have that underground great commons that the school children are supposed to be able to eat their lunches in. It's been 35 years for me. Nick Coleman's great plan.
Senator Murphy, I agree with you, and we've been hearing, and you brought up the importance of prioritization. And to me, the priorities aren't creating a new Taj Mahal around here for anyone. The priority is to make sure that the integrity of this building is addressed, and that should be number one. And we, as a legislature through the capital investment, have to put forth the proper resources to at least begin substantially what needs to be done. And also, I'll just say that I've had a conversation with the governor, and I think that he is on board with doing something significantly in the next bonding cycle as well. At least I hope he is.
Mr. Chair, can this money be used for the design of a new state office building to complement the offices that are now in the Capitol?
I'm
or is
sure
it just limited to the Capitol?
Well, the Capitol complex is what we're talking about.
Capitol complex. Thank you. I am silent now.
Okay. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, just in brief response, the reason this hasn't moved forward is because when it's been presented in a couple of bonding cycles, we have other things we want to do between local projects and whatever else. That's why it hasn't happened.
Definitely.
And if members of this body in the next bonding cycle want to undertake an effort relative to this, and there's the political will to do it, it'll be done.
Correct. Senator Nelson.
Well, just one comment. I believe that this building actually is bigger than any of us. And the intent of this Capitol Commission, at least my intent, is that we focus on preserving this building. We cannot, in good conscience, allow it to fall down. And so the desire is that, one, and we have to prioritize, that we preserve this building and make sure that we can preserve the grandeur and the architecture that is here. So that's the number one goal.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Those in favor of this? I'm sorry. Speak to him. You want to talk?
I don't have to. Right, we support the amendment.
Well, otherwise, we're going to vote it down.
Then I need to talk.
Now, those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
And now, Senator Mr. Chair, if I could just get to my oral amendment, which is much smaller, but if you could turn to page R92. I'm looking at striking a few words on line 81.5 and 81.6. And the reason is for the discussion we just had, which is what is the priority of this commission, and the priority is to make sure that we preserve this structure. And with that, I have my amendment is to strike on 81.5 the word parking, mass transit, then strike the word including public access to the Capitol balcony, and then on line 81.6, the tunnel system. So, again, I would like to avoid getting such a broad definition or such a broad scope that we don't focus on the priority. I also think, actually, the term citizen access at 81.5, which I'm not striking, actually encompasses a lot of those other things. Parking, mass transit, public access. So just kind of cleaning up the language and focusing on citizen access, that is my oral amendment.
Okay, discussion? Those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Senator Nelson, I just have one more task for you.
Yes.
Explain to Representative Lanning what you've done.
Yes, I absolutely will.
Thank you. Anything else on Article 4? Senator Engelbrechtson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could have Mr. Becker come up.
It's Article 5, isn't
it? Oh, I'm sorry. Is that the wrong article?
Yeah, wrong article. Anything else on Article 4?
I was getting so excited we're getting to the end here. I thought
I have a couple of amendments yet. Quickly, we'll do A34. I'll move that. A34, do they have it? 34 and 33 are coming out. A34 deals with deadlines for submitting information and reports. So for those that are receiving funding, these are the deadlines.
Is this to A? Is this Article 5?
Hey, I'm sorry. Kristen,
good luck.
Sorry, wrong article. All right, let's go back to Article 4.
So you were thinking we were getting done as well.
I was too.
Article 5. Hang on.
Okay, we can do it.
No.
Okay, Article 4. Anything else? Otherwise, those in favor of Article 4 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Mr. Chairman, if you'll indulge me for a couple minutes. I wanted to wait till after we had adopted Article 4, but when I can avail myself of the opportunity to offer a little bit of a history lesson, I like to do it. and this would be a good place to do it.
What was your training before you became a lawyer or a senator?
My training?
I wanted you to say you were a history major.
I was a history major.
Oh, that's what I wanted to hear.
So, Mr. Chairman, if you'll allow me, this amendment, obviously, as I think everybody knows, originated as the habitat preservation piece supported by a number of sportsmen over the years. Nothing was happening with that amendment. I don't believe either the House or the Senate was pursuing it whatsoever until what surfaced publicly for the first time, the idea actually was broached initially in 2002, was the opportunity to include another part of the quality of life of Minnesota, the arts, culture, historic aspect of Minnesota. It was that combination, Senate Finance Committee in 2005-2006, that led to the first passage of the amendment off the floor of either body. Obviously, with passage in 2007-2008, placement on the ballot. Articles 1, 2, and what happened, Articles 1, 2, and 3 are a little bit more straightforward than Article 4, which has become kind of a catch-all. If I were to do it all over again, Mr. Chairman, I would have anticipated the credit collapse of 2008 and would have put that in the original amendment language. But obviously, I didn't anticipate that. And so to some extent, Article 4 became the only free money in town. It was also diminished in size with the addition of the clean water piece, which was actually a secondary piece initially, but became obviously the political driver during the 2008 public campaign, as well as the arts component, which was always part of the original Senate bill. So I mentioned that quickly, Mr. Chairman, that everybody's trying to get access to Article 4. What was also intended with this amendment was to utilize the sales tax, and to be blunt, because the sales tax, absent some significant economic downturn, is always a growth revenue. And I think clearly if anybody looks at the history of state revenues and state appropriations, even if we get back to the times of 2001, or say 99, 2000, 2001, once you get past the drivers of K-12, human services, higher education, to a lesser extent, corrections, everything else gets scraps. And that's particularly true of environmental programs, arts and cultural programs, parks programs. And so the expectation was is that with some slow but steady growth, there wouldn't be the need to go back to the general fund in many of these areas. So I mentioned that, Mr. Chairman, because obviously Article 4 has been utilized. Everybody's looking to figure out how they can get included. And I will suggest that we need to exercise some caution. I certainly defend how the amendment was drafted. I will mention that there was a very senior member of the state Senate, not myself, who was involved in the promulgation of this amendment, who wanted Article 4 to be only arts and arts education and nothing else. I oppose that, and obviously it's broader than simply arts and arts education. But I'll just use a quick example, and Senator Nelson, I apologize for, I'm not trying to single you out as an example. We've just concluded a discussion of the importance of restoration of state capital and the fact that in the bonding process it was given short shrift. If we were to say that Article 4, that fund was to be used, was to be the sole source of money for the restoration of state capital, it would simply absorb the entirety of the amendment for the next two or three cycles. I don't think it might be appropriate to do something, but I don't think the people, the 1.6 million people who voted for this amendment, anticipated that in its entirety Article 4 would be used for maintenance of a state building, no matter how important, exquisite, or significant the building is. Nor do I think the folks who voted for this amendment had a number of other utilizations in mind. I'll use one small example. I've learned about it. It's significant. It's important. Nobody's going to vote against it. And that would be the appropriation here for the disabled veterans camp. That's a camp. It more appropriately would be in the parks section. I understand that, Mr. Chairman, both yourself and Senator Ingridson, who's on the Senate side done a splendid job on this bill, felt this year that was the only place it could be. But I just mentioned that as a small example, that we have to be a little bit careful about going too far afield because I think it goes against what that legislative intent was, and I recognize that legislatures change and individuals change. More importantly, I think it also we also have to keep in mind what 1.6 million people intended in voting for this thing. And I don't want to finally, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the time to make these comments. I don't think I'd be as presumptuous to say that 1.6 million people vote for the amendment because of the inclusion of this article. No question the driving force was clean water, driving political force. I had some tangential involvement with the amendments campaign. There's some people in this room who were on the director's board for the campaign. I can see several of them here who were involved day-to-day in the passage of the amendment during the 2008 campaign. They could speak to that better than I could, but certainly clean water was the political driver. But for the folks who voted for these other articles, whether it be habitat preservation, arts, culture, parks, I think they had some intent in mind. And I think to keep faith with the voters, we have to keep that in mind. So appreciate the chance to give both my historical speech and my political speech.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Cohen. And certainly, I share your concern about trying to use significant parts of this for the capital. I mean, it should be capital investment money. All right. Moving along.
Thank you.
I would like to, at this time, move adoption of the spreadsheet. I'm coming back. Any other discussion on the spreadsheets that we've gone over a couple times? Those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Spreadsheet is adopted. Now Article 5. Yes.
Mr. Chair, we have been approached by both the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and members of the business community to put some language in here that deals with the wild rice issue. I believe the wild rice issue is more appropriately the language in the environment bill. It's a significant environment financial impact on our state, and it's currently in the finance bill. But the agency and the industry have come to an agreement, and we do have some funding in Article 2 of this bill that we just adopted the spreadsheet of. If we could have very short testimony from both the agency and the business community to confirm that they have an ironclad agreement on language so that no one comes back in the next few days and says, oh, we want to change the language, I think it would be beneficial to hear both Mr. Robertson and Mr. Kadelka. I believe Mr. Kadelka is going to be able, this could be precedent setting. We may be in new territory. I think Mr. Kadelka may speak for the governor's office today, so this will be good if we could hear that.
Gentlemen, welcome again, Mr. Kadelka.
Chairs and committee members, again, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I work with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And Representative McNamara is correct. Over the last couple of weeks, the Chamber, U.S. Steel, and other interested groups have been sharing some language on the wild rice sulfate standard issue. And we have, believe we've come to an agreement where language is acceptable to the PCA, the Chamber, U.S. Steel. We've shared it with interest groups, including the tribes, along with the environmental groups. And it is a language that the governor supports.
Yes.
As Representative McNamara has mentioned, it is very important language that when we do have a slight disagreement that we believe it would be a good spot, would be the legacy bill and the additional dollars to complete the study, it would be a good home for it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mike Robertson representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I agree with Mr. Kadelka. We've spent a significant amount of time, and I appreciate the time of the Commissioner Austin and his staff in working with us on the language. We fully agree with the language that we have been discussing, and we agree with that it could appropriately go into this bill because of the $500,000 that you already have in the bill, and this gives direction as to how that money would proceed to be spent.
Thank you. Anything else? Okay, thanks, gentlemen. On to Article 5, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 5 of the House bill begins on the bottom of R96. Senate does not have an Article 5, so I'll speak to the House language. It really starts on R97. That's a section of law that's amended in the House bill. It's a section that requires the Legislative Coordinating Commission to have a website to post information about funded legacy projects. The House proposes to add much more specific language about what recipients have to provide to the LCC and what the LCC must post on its website, including specific requirements for non-competitive and competitive grants programs. Moving on to R99, then there's a series of changes. The same changes are made to sections of statute that deal with each of the four legacy funds. On R99, that's the Parks and Trails Fund, modifies existing statute about expenditures and accountability for legacy money to clarify the reporting to the LCC and to require, in the language right now, the House side, R99 would require a state agency or any other recipient of legacy money, in this case Parks and Trails Fund, to display the legacy logo on the recipient's website homepage. And clicking on that logo would lead the person to a dedicated legacy page that would include contact information that someone could use to find out more information, as well as a link to the LCC's website. And then there's language that says that future eligibility for legacy money is contingent upon satisfying these requirements. Under R100, then you see corresponding language at the top there for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And then starting at 88.33 with Section 4, that's the Clean Water Fund. That goes on to R101. The bottom of R101, Section 5, is the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Corresponding changes, those go on to 102. And then at the bottom of R102, Section 6 is says that the rest of the provisions within the House bill would apply to all appropriations in this bill from any of the four legacy funds. And then you see the general provisions begin on the top of R103, various requirements of all recipients of legacy money. And then Section 8, the intent of Section 8 is to put a deadline for this biennium on the reports that are due to the LCC, and to say that if all the information for a project is not available by those deadlines, then the recipient can provide the information as soon as it does become available. Section 9 says that if there's a lawsuit and a judge determines that the legacy money unconstitutionally substituted for traditional sources of money, then that appropriation would cancel. And any grant contract from legacy money would have to include this clause. Section 10 on the bottom of R103 requires the Minnesota Management and Budget Agency to develop accounting guidance and best practices for state agencies for properly accounting for their expenditure of legacy funds. And R104 then is the moratorium on recommendations from the LSARTSAM's Outdoor Heritage Council for acquisitions outside of the 7-county metropolitan area.
Just 1 second, Senator Coleman. The purpose of some of the things, the reporting in Article 5 is this. We've expanded on what Representative Murphy had done last time, and there were questions, concerns, I think, generated certainly by the public and by members as well, that we'd be able to easily track, and that the money, the path of the money, be accessible to the public and to the members. And so that's the purpose of this, to increase accountability, to increase the reporting, and to increase transparency. And that's what we're trying to get at in this. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just inquire, and I've had a chance, you know, looked at the language previously, had a chance to talk to you a little bit, but now glancing at the totality of the language, let me just ask, and I certainly like what's being suggested, but what happens where you have smaller recipients? Certainly if we're talking about the Metropolitan Council or the State Arts Board or some of the larger agencies involved, I would assume that compliance with this section would take a little bit of effort, but could easily be done. But what happens if you have a small regional park or a small arts or cultural group in, I don't know, Perham, Minnesota, where they don't have as extensive a website or maybe the ability to put together as extensive a website? The language makes it pretty mandatory that if they don't comply with all parts of this, their grant is contingent upon compliance. And I'm wondering how, Mr. Chairman, you would envision this section being followed. Again, if you use my hypotheticals, and I could talk about smaller grantees within the Twin Cities. A lot of discussion in this committee and throughout this legislature of some of the handicaps. That I don't know if that's quite the right word, but certainly there's a greater ability in the Twin Cities to comply with something like this than I would think maybe some of the smaller rural communities. And, if they miss a beat on this, are they then precluded from any further consideration? And, again, I'm not talking about the larger organizations, but, the very small grantees or smaller grantees.
Thank you, Senator Cohen. I believe that the amendment that we'll be offering addresses that. Is that correct, Mr. Sullivan?
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, if I know the amendment you're referring to, it would require at least the placement of the legacy logo on the homepage only of state agencies, not of all recipients.
Okay. Sorry, I asked that long question.
Mr. Chairman, could I just – I want to clarify.
Mr. Knopf.
It says a direct recipient. Does that mean – In the SARD stamps, we define recipient, and that means Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, and people like that. So they would have to display this on their website, too, the way this language works.
Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and members, yeah, that's correct. It doesn't say state agency. You're correct. It says direct recipient, so it would be anyone who is specified within the bill to receive a direct appropriation.
And Mr. Chair, it may not be as clear in other areas because you did adopt a definition of recipient that does mean Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, people like, but it's just whether they receive it a direct appropriation through DNR. But the burden would be on them and not on DNR to do this for those grants, for that money. I just want to make sure that it's clear that they would have to do it, and then where it's the agency, then they would have to do it. At least for LaSard Stamps. Now, in other areas, you may not have it firmly defined like that. It may be a little bit more ambiguous over, but somebody needs to do it.
Okay, thank you. Anything else, Ms. Sullivan? I think I'll move my amendment at this time.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Okay, so are we on the A33 amendment then? Is it?
Do you want me to move? Should I move the A33? Is that what we're going to talk about?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what. You said something about. I thought I heard you say something about moving something, so.
Why don't I. Are you going to continue the line of questioning that we've just been talking about and reporting?
Well,
maybe I'll just move the amendment, then we can continue.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll move Amendment A33. Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you. To your amendment, to the A33 amendment, I'd like to do an oral amendment, and I think it comes up in three different places. It's just some little wordage here in four different places when practical, and I'll have when practicable. All right. It's easy for me to say. If I would have Mr. Knopf show exactly where, just some technical changes for.
Mr. Chair and members, it would be on 1.5 before the capitalized A at the beginning. You insert when practicable, and then on 1.15 before A, when practicable, and on 1.25 do the same thing, and 2.9 the same.
Excuse me.
Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, would you consider the word practical?
No. No.
Okay. He was a sheriff. He likes big words.
I was a reading teacher.
They have different meanings.
Further discussion, Senator Cohen. Do you have anything again?
Well, I think Senator Ingebrigtsen's language would clarify
yours if it's
acceptable.
All right. Vote on the oral amendment first. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Further discussion on the amendment. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Now we'll go to Amendment 34.
Oh, I do.
I move Amendment 34,
A34.
This one establishes deadlines for reporting and submitting information. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, could I just get a quick explanation as to what we've done in the past? Is it going to be different? That's all.
Well, reports have been due at different times, and we're just kind of trying to get some consistency with this and making sure that what we are asking for, that what's specified in the law, the deadline is given us. Those in discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Do we have any other amendments? Yes.
Mr. Chair, I could possibly have an oral amendment on R-100, but I'd like to have Mr. Becker come forward and comment.
So we did fine.
Well, I got to remove that.
Some verbiage on...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Becker.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, you have taken care of my concerns on that page. Okay.
That's why we're here.
You're welcome, Mr. Becker.
I know that. That's what I'm doing. Senator, Representative McNamara, would you care to...
Mr. Chair, thank you. I understand the Senate doesn't like Section 11 in the House bill, so to get things done, I will move to remove Section 11. And maybe Mr. Knopf, there might be a second part to that amendment.
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, what you would want to do is move the House Article 5 with the exception of Section 11. So you want to move Sections 1 through 10 as amended.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Sections 1 through 10, Article 5, as amended.
Thank you. Further discussion? Any discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Amendment out. Mr. Chair, I do have one final amendment.
Don't leave yet, guys. It's going to be good.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Senator Ingebrigtsen.
GK023 amendment. I pass that off.
Look at this.
This will become Section 11. You give me two of them.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, been a lot of discussion all day long here, several days actually, about expending dollars from this constitutional amendment as we have in the past. And I've heard some concerns with regards to different issues. Most prevalent would be the issue of being did I get some inclement? I can still talk about it.
You can.
Now I'm really flustered.
I'm
some talk, excuse me, members, some talk about supplanting issues, and I think it's very fair to say that this group is seriously concerned about looking out for those types of issues, and I know I have made that statement several times, being involved in one portion of this, and that'd be the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage, and it's always talked about whether we should be looking at funding different state organizations with these dollars, and in light of the fact that we're getting close to the end of the session here, and there's a possibility of all different possibilities thrown around, and I don't like to use the word shutdown. It has been thrown around. In fact, I think it was brought up the first week in session, and we haven't even discussed it until just recently, but it's pretty obvious we're getting close to the end here, and we're concerned about these dollars going out and being used in a proper fashion, and I think we being the stewards of these dollars, we have to be very careful to make sure that everything else is in order before they do go out. So that's what the amendment addresses, folks. It basically clearly says that none of the money appropriated in this act is available until the regular budget for the appropriated agencies is finally enacted for fiscal years 2012 and 13. Stand for any questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
But what is the definition of regular budget? Mr. Sullivan, or is that a term of art?
Mr. Sullivan. Sort?
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, I would defer to Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, it's the regular budget bills for the agency that fund the agencies for this upcoming biennium.
Well,
Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf, I think I could have inferred that much. But I'm wondering if this is a phrase that's used in statute for, I assume, the biennial budget. I mean, is it better to have the biennial budget? Or
Mr. Chair?
Mr.
Senator
Knopf.
Cohen, I think that's a great improvement. I think Senator Ingebrigtsen may want to just incorporate, instead of regular budget, insert the word biennial budget.
Certainly would incorporate.
Or Mr. Chairman, operating budget for the agencies?
Mr. Chair, either one, but I think we usually talk about biennial budget in the statute.
You offering an oral amendment, biennial?
Or operating?
I'll offer that, Mr. Chairman, if
okay.
Make of the amendment one to incorporate it.
So until the biennial budget, are you deleting the word regular? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I would accept that as a just incorporate that into my amendment.
Okay.
Good Everybody point. Understand that?
It's incorporated into the amendment, biennial. Further discussion. Those in favor of this amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. We are now going to say, Senator Cohen, do you have a question?
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
I was going to make a. Senator Cohen, what do you
okay,
have?
Mr. Chairman, there's been a discussion of this wild rice issue, and I hesitate to walk into an area that I know basically nothing about. But I know it's something of importance to the governor, and so I don't know where that was left resolved. I think Representative Murphy's maybe a little bit better equipped to talk about it, maybe. But
Mr. Chair, I know that Senator Saxog is here. I've been interested in the wild rice study since it popped up. At the beginning of the year, and we had a meeting with our congressman in Duluth and talked about the standards, and I heard very extensive testimony about the importance of having a study with science-based information, and that we were making setting standards on science base. And I know that this bill spends $500,000 for the beginning of a study, but I think that, and we just heard 20 minutes ago about that the Chamber of Commerce and the PCA and the U.S. Steel have all agreed now on a direct route to go, but we haven't heard from legislators that are supporting this from the area. And I was told that Senator Saxnog wanted to make some comments. Senator Tomasoni. And I would like to hear that.
Is it okay if we...
I'll talk to the House members. Welcome, Senators, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, they're really good folks. I can attest to that. Yeah.
Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, the key to I think the amendment that you or the language that you heard about between the Chamber and the U.S. Steel is that there are some permits that have been let for U.S. Steel to expand at Keetac. And Keetac is the taconite plant in Keewatin that is now owned by U.S. Steel. And what U.S. Steel wants to do is they want to start up line number one that has been in production in years past. And they've spent about $20 million already on the environmental processes, and they are ready to go and to put people back to work and to produce about, I think, about 2 million tons more of pellets. The water permit is key to this, and the agreement in this between U.S. Steel and the EPA and the amendment is important because without an agreement like this, they would probably have to spend an extra $250 million in order to start the plant up just to do a water treatment plant, and I think it would kill the project. And so from that standpoint, it's extremely important. And then from the standpoint of the rest of the mining industry, there has to be some type of precedent here because of the fact that all of these companies dewater pits. And when they dewater pits, the water has to go somewhere, and there has to be an ability to keep people working and keeping the plants open. And so I think that's the gist of the importance because this particular standard has basically been ignored all through the 70s when it was first put into rule in the PCA. And suddenly it reared its head. And we don't exactly know what the right science is or if the science is accurate that's in law right now. They're talking about 10 milligrams per liter of water for wild rice, and yet drinking water is 250 milliliters. And so, I know wild rice is growing in the area. I don't know what the sulfide levels are in the water at where the wild rice is growing right now. I know we have a in-resident wild rice farmer in the Senate, in Senator Scoey, and I think he believes the sulfides don't have anything to do with the growth of the wild rice. And so I think we need to have the study started immediately. I think it's important that we get something passed so that people can understand exactly where to go.
So Mr. Exactly. Chair, I think what it all gets down to is we're looking for a definitive study on the effect of sulfates on wild rice. I know that seems simple, but that's exactly what we're after here, and it needs to be done with due haste because, as Senator Tomasoni says, there's permits that are already up and about to go in effect, and if they don't have some satisfaction that the study is going to progress, they probably won't do the projects.
Thank you. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senators, thank you for that testimony, and as you both know, that we've been talking about this for a while. In fact, we had a joint committee meeting up in the good senator's town, and I believe he was still hobbling around after surgery, or was it before surgery? I don't remember.
It was just the first hit. Yeah.
And we certainly understand, and we're hearing from the people up there that we've got to do something for economic development and Well, we need to do that statewide. There's no question about it. But you have some tremendous opportunities up there with the possibility of the additional mining going on up there. And this study you talk about has certainly been on the front burner throughout the whole process. This, just so the members know, this study is, or the statute is, or the language is in the Environmental Natural Resource Finance Bill, and the appropriation is there, part of the appropriation, actually two-thirds of it, $1 million there, and $500 from this committee. So it is being addressed, and in fact, it can't be appropriated, I don't believe, until that budget is settled one way or the other right now, so just so everybody knows that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, could I just put some names on some urgency?
Senator Tomasoni.
A plant at Mesabinogget, SR Steel, which we all voted for, could put get this steel plant up and running. Keytec in Keewatin, Polymet up in Hoyt Lakes, and the potential for every wastewater treatment plant in the state. That's how important this particular study is to find out what's actually going on. So appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Tomasoni, or Senator Tomasoni and Senator Saxlog, I was just, is there any chance, I just wanted to ask a question. Have you talked with the governor's office about this? Is there any chance he would take a look at the environment bill first and treat that with the same sense of urgency that you're communicating to us here this afternoon?
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, I think that's above my pay grade, but I can find out, okay?
Senator Tomasoni, talk to him, hockey player to hockey player.
Hockey player. Well, he's a goalie, you know.
Were you a goalie?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment
Murphy?
For our consideration.
What?
I have an amendment for our consideration.
Okay.
Where's the ink coming?
There's money, but I think they want another million.
Get rid of that.
Seemed to fit his legacy well.
Everyone have the amendment now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy, did you move the amendment?
I so moved. Senator Cohen and I so moved.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might just quickly.
Senator Cohen, certainly.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick comment. There's been discussion about this. Obviously, this would take care of the problem. Struck by the comments by Senator Saxhawk and Senator Tomasoni that apparently this is something supported not simply by the geography, but apparently also by the Chamber of Commerce.
Comments? Senator Engelbretson.
Yes. Thank you to Representative Murphy's amendment. I would not vote in favor of it because, as I explained before, and it's fairly clear that this is being dealt with in our environmental natural resource budget, and I think it should be left there. That's where all the work has gone into it. And I certainly understand the immediacy, but I think it can be handled with some negotiation, and I think Senator Peterson just talked about that negotiation, and hopefully we can move forward and make this work. But I would vote against this amendment at this time.
Mr. Chair, could
Representative Murphy.
Could Mr. Kildaka address the committee one more time, please?
Mr. Kildaka. Welcome back. Been a while.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Kirk Adelka. I'm with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. This language, the GK019 amendment, is the language that's come to agreement between the MPCA, Chamber of Commerce, and U.S. Steel. There, as the senators mentioned from the Iron Range, there are permits currently within the MPCA. Right now, the KTAC permit for air has gone out on public notice. The water permit is very close to being done and will be go out on public notice soon. This is directly related to those items. I know there was discussion of whether this is the proper place or not for the amendment. The legacy bill and the Clean Water Fund, the dollars are used for creating for work, including standards work, which this is the study is all about, is finding what is that correct standard for sulfates and how it interacts with wild rice to protect them. This is a proper place for the bill. In addition, there is the funding in it. I know the bill has right now $500,000 for the study. The governor's proposal is for $1.5 million for the study, which I believe all groups agree that's the proper amount, and that this would be a good source of dollars, a Clean Water Fund. Again, standards work is being done with other areas with the clean water dollars, and this, again, will be along that same line.
Questions, comments? Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, are the sovereign nations opposed to this?
Mr. Kudelka?
Mr. Chair and committee members, we have shared the language with the tribes. They have looked at their very interested in the study language. They have been working with us on the technical groups. They're aware of the language. I don't know exactly where they'd fall on the whole amendment. I have not been one to speak to them, so I don't have that answer.
Thank you.
Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Kudelka and Mr. Robertson, and I appreciate your work. We asked you to get this done. We appreciate it. I'm glad you got it done. This is not the appropriate place to do this. This belongs in the Environment Finance Bill, and I'm opposed to putting it in this bill at this time.
This is the language they like.
Further discussion?
Can I be on your Environment Finance Committee?
We may have to have a new conference committee, Representative Murphy, so that's certainly a possibility.
I renew our motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion fails. And now,
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Well, Mr. Chair, you've done a lot of good work here. I appreciate the great work, but I believe, Mr. Chair, I think it would be appropriate if it's okay with you. I think we should recess and just come back to make sure staff's got everything straightened out. Just come back if it would work, and at maybe a time like, say, 7 o'clock, and then just come back quickly and do it and be done, have the vote then. I don't know, Mr. Chair, what your thoughts are on that.
That Representative McNamara, that was my intent. I'd like to express appreciation of both chairs here for all the work that everyone has done. There are hundreds of fingerprints on this. I think it's a good piece of legislation. We'll give staff some time to look it over, dot a few I's, cross a few T's if needed, and we'll come back here at 7 o'clock and do final passage on the bill. Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, is that 7 o'clock or a call of the chair, depending on how long it takes?
Unless you hear otherwise, call the chair? Tentatively say 7, but it'll be call the chair. Recess to call the chair.
Oh, you should have adjourned.